This is NHPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and here's some sound from the top stories of the week.
What's disappointing to me, frankly, is that when I've done these forecasts in the past or looked at the current state of the economy in the past, I've always been able to say New Hampshire's a leader in New England. You know, we're a leader in population growth, we're a leader in job growth, we're a leader in income growth, and we're not a leader any longer.
We don't actually know what the allegations are at this point. We believe there have to be serious allegations like that of a crime, if not an actual crime, in order for the Attorney General to suspend the county attorney.
We are sitting right there making that final decision. Are we going to be run by government? Is government going to supply everything? Are we going to be enslaved by them? Or are we going to be the dream of our founding fathers?
I think this is eminently achievable. We're trying to meet the governor halfway. We're trying to get the program started as early as possible. That's important to the governor. But we will, if a program's going to go forward, stick to our reforms.
I'm always going to be there and available for people who are in their time of need. When someone calls and they have a problem, I want to be there in their dark hour, and I want to be there in their bright hour, and when they have their celebrating hour, too.
That was From the Top, economist Dennis DeLay on New Hampshire's job market. Michael Ramsdell, lawyer for Rockingham County Attorney Jim Reams. Republican U.S. Senate candidate Karen Testerman making her official entry into the race. GOP State Senator Jeb Bradley on Medicaid expansion. And the late Ray Burton, longtime executive counselor from the North Country. Burton passed away in the wee hours of Tuesday morning. He'd represented the North Country for 35 years, and shortly before his death had said he wouldn't run for re-election, given his struggle with kidney cancer. A public memorial service is planned for mid-December, and all week, Granite Staters have been remembering Burton through statements, dedications, and their favorite stories. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. Let's hear from you. We want your thoughts about the headlines of the week, whether it's Ray Burton's passing or reaction in the Granite State to the latest on the Affordable Care Act in Washington, or this week's report outlining some concerns about New Hampshire's economic future. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. Our guests for this week's roundup are Kevin Landrigan, political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Kevin, welcome back. Good to see you.
Pleasure to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. Dean, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hi, good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Josh Rogers, senior political reporter for us here at New Hampshire Public Radio. And Josh, thanks for taking some time out for us this morning.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and I wanted to start with you, Josh, because you covered Ray Burton when he was an executive counselor. You covered his passing this week. Lots of reaction around the state. Why is this so important, Josh? Why does Ray Burton's death seem to touch so many people around New Hampshire, not just the North Country?
Well, as you mentioned, he's served both District 1, the council, and Grafton County as a commissioner for, decades. A ubiquitous presence in the cities and towns he represented, literally no issue too small to merit his attention. And someone who really represented his district in a way that sort of transcended partisanship. Ray Burton's a Republican, but he really gave everybody in his district an audience when they needed one, and approached a job in a style that would be difficult to replicate. I mean, pretty much always on the go, as a clip of tape indicated, always there when people needed help, and also very eager to be there when people were celebrating. Countless parades, suppers, you name it. He attended it, and the bottom line for him was always what's in it for District 1, what's in it for Grafton County, and how do we get more people from those parts of the state on state boards and commissions? How do we get more funding, more projects? Sort of parochial politician in the best sense of the word, a kind man, and you know, he'll be missed.
Yeah, and Kevin, it's interesting to me that even though the executive council is sort of a very limited position, it approves state contracts over a certain amount of money. It approves gubernatorial nominations. Beyond that, you know, there really isn't that much you officially can do. But Josh is right. Unofficially, Ray Burton did a ton.
Yeah, he really did. I think certainly expanded the office of executive council a lot. I think too, just kind of leaves a tremendous void up there because there isn't any question that sort of north of Concord, if you needed help, he's the first person you turn to. As we know, there's not going to be a lot of time here between now and a special election that has to occur. And there isn't anybody, you know, sort of the Ray Burton in training. I mean, many folks, myself included, thought Ray would remain there until he came down with his kidney cancer, which struck him kind of so violently and so quickly, as it often does once it reaches a vital organ like that.
Yeah, he had just announced at the end of October that he wouldn't be running for re-election. And so you're right, Kevin. A lot of people thought, all right, well, we'll deal with that when the time comes in 2014. But this happened very quickly. Dean.
Yeah, he really represented the classic notion of constituency service, or the idea that all politics is local. And in a time of polarized politics in which we've seen some pretty significant swings in the makeup of our state legislature, of the executive council, here's somebody who's been a constant over 30 years and really came into politics at a time where there was a somewhat different notion of the relationship between ideology and constituency service.
Yeah, so to that point, it is certainly a more sharply partisan era than the era that Ray Burton represents. And Kevin Landrigan, what do you think? How much do you expect any new councillor who will fill Burton's seat to take on Burton's sort of nonpartisan flavor?
Yeah, that'll be interesting, certainly. I mean, the council district has been changed by redistricting in 2010 and 2012 was the first election when they operated under that new district. It's more Democratic than it was before. When they were negotiating this map, there were thoughts that this seat, once Ray Burton were to leave it, could well be replaced by a Democrat. And I think that's a real possibility, depending on who runs. And that's really the open question now. There aren't a lot of obvious names that come to the fore, really. People who are either occupied in positions right now, like Jeff Woodburn, who actually was an intern for Ray Burton years and years ago, former Democratic Party chairman. He's a state senator now. Deb McLeod is someone up in Franconia. She's been a state representative. She's run for state senate. She's pretty well respected up there. I think the Democrats could do well with a candidate like that. Republicans have a much harder way to hoe. I think they're going to have to try and find someone who, like Dean said, is not a polarizing figure. Certainly someone like former Senator Fred King, who's a Coos County Commissioner, was someone who was a moderate Republican. He's someone who perhaps, if he were to run, could give Republicans a really good chance.
Well, as we talk about notable Granite Staters passing away, we should also pay tribute to the Reverend Douglas Thuner, former bishop of New Hampshire's Episcopal Church, who died Friday, a week ago. He led the church for a long, long time, from 1986 to 2003, at which point Gene Robinson was appointed bishop. So we just want to pay tribute to Bishop Thuner passing this past week as well. Our phone number for you to join us here in the exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us with your questions and comments about some of the top headlines that caught your attention this week, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, all one word, NHPR Exchange. And gentlemen, I want to talk to you about, boy, a couple big stories surrounding the Affordable Care Act this week. Dean Spiliotis, yesterday, President Obama went on the air, made some big news and around these health exchanges where folks have had a hard time signing up. Very few people, it turns out, have been signing up. Here in New Hampshire, the numbers are below 300. Just remind us what the president said, Dean, and then we'll put it in New Hampshire context.
Sure. You know, President Obama now has ownership for, I think, what is going to become one of the most famous campaign promises in recent memory. I don't know if it's quite up to the "Read My Lips, No New Taxes" of George H.W. Bush, but the campaign statement, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan, period, I think is something that political scientists are going to be remembering for a long time. What he basically said yesterday was that he needed to bow to the reality of the situation. Several million people either had or were in danger around the country of having their current health plans canceled. So then they then turned to look to the health exchanges for new coverage. And the health exchange, either state level or the healthcare.gov, the national site, lots of problems with that site. So there's a real clamor, particularly among Democrats now, to extend deadline or to give people more time. So what President Obama said was that he will allow health insurers to renew plans with existing plans for at least another year, for 1 year if there are problems perhaps further. You know, I think this is bowing to the reality of the fact that a lot of Democrats who are up for election are very concerned. I think, you know, one item that should be mentioned is former President Bill Clinton came out earlier this week and said he thought that President Obama should let people keep their plans. And that really kind of opened the floodgates. It gave Democrats cover to put more pressure on President Obama. So this is actually a very, you know, it seems like sort of like a minor kind of administrative adjustment to the law. But in reality, it's much more complicated because he's not forcing insurers to do it. The insurers have to decide that they're willing to go back to the consumers now and renew policies. It's also up to state regulators. So there's no guarantee that people won't have to pay higher premiums as a result.
And Josh, in New Hampshire, people are kind of saying, okay, what does this mean for us?
Well, they're trying to sort it out. I mean, I have a copy of the directive that CMS sent out to state regulators, and it says, you know, under this policy, health insurance coverage in the individual or small group market that's renewed for policy year January 1, 2014 to October 1, 2014 will not be considered out of compliance. You know, it's unclear from the plain reading of this whether this means that you could potentially – somebody could renew a policy now and then renew again, you know, before October, really pushing this out. And, you know, the politics of it are one thing, but the policy implications for the health of the insurance pools is huge. And obviously, you know, as Dean said, this was a decision – this policy leaves – it's somewhat up to insurance regulators to decide. Some regulators have said, no, this is bad for the market. That's out in Washington is one example of that. And we're waiting to see what Commissioner Savini says here. This is going to be interesting to watch for some time.
Absolutely. All right. We'll start taking your calls, questions, and comments after a short break. So keep it right here.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And support for NHPR, as you've no doubt heard, comes from you, our members. And this week, we'd like to especially thank all of our sustaining members for your pledge of ongoing support. Your monthly contribution provides NHPR a regular, reliable source of income and keeps this 24-hour news service on sound financial footing. Thank you. More of our New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup of the week's top national stories. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Cedar Crest Center for Children with Disabilities, intensive nursing support, special education and therapy services for children with high-tech medical needs in a loving home-like setting. CedarCrestCenter.org. From the Turner Group of Concord, architects, engineers, and building scientists celebrating over 20 years of creating sustainable buildings for a healthy environment, online at hlturner.com. And Lang McLowry Real Estate, serving the real estate needs of New Englanders from 16 office locations and online at lmsre.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We're covering some of the stories that made headlines this week in the Granite State. We want your thoughts, questions, and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. All one word, NHPR Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Our guests for the roundup this week, Dean Spiliotis, Josh Rogers, and Kevin Lindergan. And Kevin, I did want to get your thoughts also on all the reaction here in New Hampshire to these changes in Washington. Not only do you have the president coming out yesterday and saying, okay, we'll give you another year on these health plans, but you've got competing bills on Capitol Hill. What's the New Hampshire take on all this, Kevin?
Well, certainly we've seen the Democratic members of the New Hampshire delegation trying to seek, as Dean was saying, trying to seek some political cover for this. We had Senator Shaheen this week actually file her legislation we'd kind of been waiting for, which is would allow for people to have 2 extra months to enroll in these exchanges to choose a new plan. But with regard to on the House side, both Democrats, Carol Shea Porter and Annie Custer, got behind legislation from Fred Upton, a Michigan Republican, which would essentially do what President Obama had said, which would allow folks to have an extra year to keep their plans. And in New Hampshire, the insurance angle is a really tricky one for Insurance Commissioner Roger Savini. I can understand why he wants to have some discussion with the industry about this, because really what you had was, until yesterday, you had Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield New Hampshire, the only game on the exchange. And you had a lot of insurance companies essentially saying, I'm out of the individual insurance market. I'm not playing anymore. Now this decision gives all these folks a little over a month to decide whether they want to get back in the market again.
Yeah, Josh, and then Dean, and then I want to ask Kevin about Medicaid expansion, which is also happening this week. Go ahead, Josh.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to watch our congressional delegation, certainly Annie Custer and Carol Shea Porter, both, you know, kind of four square supporters of so-called Obamacare from its inception. And now this Upton bill, you know, actually goes farther than what the president said. It would actually allow – it's not simply for people with their – to keep another year to re-up their existing policy. It would allow anybody to buy non-compliant policies. And again, the policy implications of that for the long-term survival and health of so-called Obamacare – you know, may be vast. We don't really know, but certainly a lot of policy analysts who are supportive of the law are saying this is going to be a disaster for the law. And so it's interesting to watch them take this stance. And they said they were going to vote for this Upton bill, barring last-minute amendments. And so I guess we'll see what happens today. But it's going to be interesting. The Democrats are having their big annual fundraising dinner this weekend, the Jefferson Jackson dinner, and it'll be interesting to see what the mood is over there. On the one hand, you know, they're not necessarily right now facing a, you know, a killer slate of Republican rivals in the upcoming election. But I mean, this is a bad scene for them.
Yeah, and it's interesting what Josh says. Shea Porter, McLean Custer, Dean Spiliotis, stalwart supporters of President Obama, and as Josh said, the Affordable Care Act, now kind of saying, ooh, not so sure.
Well, it shows you just how critical this is from an electoral perspective, because I would not have initially expected the two of them to support this House bill, because as Josh said, the House bill allows other people to buy these plans as well, and that is the danger. Is that you'll
so-called
end up with,
substandard
yeah, so you'll
plans,
end up with,
what the
care and the concern is if you go that route, you'll have a two-tiered system in which sicker people who need health care will go into the exchanges, healthy people will just buy their current policies, and you'll have this so-called downward spiral in terms of the economic health of the exchanges. So I was a bit surprised. President Obama has said he would veto that bill. Over in the Senate, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana has a different bill that allows people to keep their plans permanently, but not the new movement of new people into that market.
All right. Moving on to some other stories. And as we do, you can join us with your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, all one word, NHPR Exchange. Kevin Landrigan, in the middle of all this uproar over the exchanges, we've still got Medicaid expansion and the debate over that in the New Hampshire legislature. Special session opened late last week. Lots of activity this week, Kevin. And as you reported, yesterday the House and Senate each approved different versions of how best to extend coverage to low-income Granite staters. How different are these different versions? A lot different, Kevin, or a little different?
There's certainly some difference. Both House Speaker Terry Norelli and Governor Maggie Hassan have sort of moved towards what the Senate Republicans had wanted. There is some irony here with all the Republican criticism of the exchange and Obamacare. At the end of the day, the Senate Republican solution for people who are eligible for Medicaid under this expansion, who don't have access to health care in their workforce, would actually purchase health plans on the exchange. That's how they would have to get their insurance. The real debate is about how quickly that can happen. And this is where both Insurance Commissioner Roger Savini and Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas say that the Senate Republican plan is just too ambitious, that that they don't think the insurance market on the exchange will be mature enough to handle the people who are newly eligible under Medicaid. Under Medicaid, of course, unlike under Obamacare, Medicaid really requires that people have options to choose on the exchange. And right now, as we know, Anthem is the only health plan on that exchange. So that's what Governor Hassan is very focused on, is not allowing this exchange option for people, letting them stay on managed care under Medicaid until there are at least three insurance plans that are available. And that could take a number of years.
That's a lot to unravel. Josh?
Well, I mean, I think this may end up being a fight over the timetable more than anything else. And, you know, this morning, Governor Hassan and some Democratic lawmakers are right now actually having a press conference in the home district of Republican Senator Nancy Stiles in Hampton. And, you know, she's somebody who voted for expanded Medicaid on the Medicaid Commission and is seen as, you know, the most sympathetic Republican to Medicaid expansion. And, you know, if you have some Republicans who aren't going to vote for it at all, you know, one Democratic sort of endgame here is to try to pick off her, and then you can potentially get, you know, a majority. But it seems like we're oozing towards some sort of compromise. It probably won't come till the very end. And, you know, it may simply be over the date of implementation.
Yeah, it's the 21st, right? So next week they have to wrap this thing up, right, Josh?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's an email that just came in from Robin on what we talked about a moment ago, the healthcare marketplaces or exchanges. Robin says, I don't understand how it can be that the president can decide whether insurers can continue to offer their existing policies. If the existing policies are non-conforming relative to the new law, Robin says, I don't see how the president can unilaterally decide, quote, oh, never mind. What do you think, Dean?
Oh, this is one of the big questions you're hearing, particularly from some conservative members of Congress. You know, sort of what President Obama did technically was not to order insurers to renew policies. He said they are allowed to renew new policies. He's not actually forcing them to do it. He's saying that they have the ability to do it. He does not want the Affordable Care Act to be the reason why people's policies are canceled. So this is a big debate. Some members of Congress had said the idea that President Obama can do this administratively, make this kind of a change to an existing law, is not a fact the case. So, you know, maybe we'll see some lawsuits filed. Maybe we'll see some argumentation in Congress. But there is a belief, particularly among Republicans, that this kind of change has to be done through legislation, not through an executive action by the president. So that the comment is exactly one of the things that's being debated right now.
All right, Robin, thanks for the email. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, Wendy's been waiting in Franklin. Wendy, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I just have a couple of comments. The first one is about Executive Counselor Mr. Burton. I will reveal my age. 45. I registered to vote when I was 18. I have been a registered Democrat, the small majority minority in the state, but have always voted for Mr. Burton. I've moved up to the North Country gradually, Plymouth, and now I live in Warren, and he is a constant presence. And he, as you know, the gentleman earlier, you know, testified to his presence in the community during good times and bad times. He was, and my father owned a business and could go to him. And I know that the powers of an executive counselor, as was explained, are limited. But he really he's just so exemplary of a public servant. And if more people, more politicians, could adopt, you know, his way of dealing with his constituents, it would be just such a better state and a better country.
Wendy, thanks for calling. And Kevin Landrigan, you touched on this earlier, but again, no word on who might jump in to fill this seat, whether that person would have that sort of nonpartisan flavor that Ray Burton had.
No, that's right, certainly. And the timing of the election, too, is in some doubt. Under the statute, it has to occur by the end of March. It's looking as if it'll probably be on town meeting day. Unless there is no primary on the Democratic and Republican side. So that's where it'll stand.
Well, Wendy, thanks for your remembrances, and thanks for the call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. Join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Gentlemen, I did want to talk a little bit more about the U.S. Senate race. Gene Shaheen obviously is running for re-election next year. Couple Republicans hoping to replace her, Josh Rogers. Karen Testerman finally made it official this past week. What happened?
Well, Karen Testerman had been making noise about getting into the race for a while, and she threw her head into the ring officially at an event down at the Yard in Manchester. You know, she's well known in GOP circles as a staunch kind of full bore conservative, social conservative. Also, used to run Cornerstone policy research from Franklin. She's run for governor before, not to great effect. She joins Jim Rubin's and Andy Martin as declared Republican candidates. And, you know, she certainly will appeal to a slug of the you know, sort of Republican base, but you know, there'll probably be more people into this before it's over.
You think so?
Well, I would think it's likely. You know, but we'll, you know, who knows?
Dean, who knows?
I was going to say exactly. People seem unwilling to say that this is it. This is the field. Or, you know, I talk to Republicans and say, no, there are going to be other people, but then they can't really tell me who those people are going to be. You know, I mean, she's, as Josh said, she's well known in New Hampshire politics. She ran for governor in 2010. She finished third in the Republican primary. She said if this current time around, she said if 5,000 people signed a petition, she would run. She didn't get the 5,000 signatures. You know, I don't think she's going to be a particularly strong competitor, but who knows? Maybe I'll be surprised. It's not sort of an optimal fit for where I think the Republican Party needs to go looking forward, given the changing demographics of the state, given kind of the changing ideological complexion of the state. You know, not an ideal fit, but she certainly has every right to run.
Well, Ovid Lamontagne, who ran for governor against Maggie Hassan, Dean, was known as a social conservative,
right.
And Karen Testerman has sort of made her mark as a social conservative.
And Ovid lost by 12 points.
So, all right. Well, we will keep track of what's happening with that U.S. Senate race, see if anybody else jumps in, as some people think they will. On the economic front, guys, Dennis DeLay of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies had some worrisome economic news this week. Kevin Landrigan, what did Dennis say?
Well, essentially, I think the problem with the latest economic report as it relates to New Hampshire is that it does appear as if on the good news front that probably by the middle of next spring, by the end, it looks like by the end of May, New Hampshire will have gotten back all the jobs that it lost
next
in the last
spring.
Recession.
Right. Okay. 2014.
By 2014, by next May. So our workforce would be our labor force would be about at what it was prior to 2009, about 650,000 people. But the worrisome part, obviously, is that economic growth in New Hampshire is slated to be very sluggish in the next several years. And more importantly, I guess for us, it's supposed to be lower, significantly lower, both job growth and income growth than is occurring in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Was this a surprise, Josh, or just more of a confirmation of earlier trends and earlier reports?
Well, this is not wholly surprising, and it does come on the heels of work that, you know, Dennis DeLay and the folks at the Public Policy Center have been on for some time, that essentially the bottom line, more or less, in New Hampshire has changed. And a lot of that is due to a lack of in-migration, and that has tended to help New Hampshire historically you know, come out of recessions fast, and that's just simply not happening anymore is one big factor. And that, you know, perhaps some of the things that, you know, people have come to think of as the so-called New Hampshire advantage really, you know, may not be as compelling forces driving our economy. And so, you know, we'll see when the legislature gets back into town. There's been talk of, you know, the BIA commission, the Public Policy Center, to come up with a so-called dashboard, which would allow for a development of a sort of a retooled economic plan. The state hasn't had one for a while. There are bills in the legislature from both Democrats and Republicans who want to look at that. And so it'll be interesting to see if, you know, in the second year of a session, it's hard to know. But if something comes out that you know, people can get behind, but
that might address some of these underlying issues.
That might address some of these underlying issues. But you know, this is, you know, not shocking news, but it's certainly not positive news.
Mm-hmm. Dean, your quick reaction to this?
Sure, absolutely. You know, this is an interesting ongoing conversation I've been having with people lately, this idea that, you know, New Hampshire now is – in New England is third in job growth behind Massachusetts and Vermont, that, as Josh said, the New Hampshire advantage may not be resonating quite in the way it once did. There's this ongoing issue of young people leaving the state rather than setting up shop here. There have been a number of different initiatives taken to help students reduce their debt load and to have reasons to stay in the state. You know, New Hampshire is one of the oldest states in terms of median age. I think it's like 39 or something. A lot of retirees. You know, always a concern that the economy needs to keep moving forward. So, you know, I think that the delay study said that the growth is going to continue at least through 2017, which is, I think, was the limit on that study. So, you know, not terrible news, but again, these sort of ongoing nagging issues about how to keep the economy vibrant here.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us on this story and some of the others that we're covering in our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, all one word, NHPR Exchange. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Gentlemen, another topic that made news this week, and we also covered this last week when it broke. Josh Rogers, this is the story surrounding Jim Reams, longtime county attorney in Rockingham County, was stripped of his prosecutorial authority last week, told not to return to his office. And then Mr. Reams got a lawyer this week. He's fighting these charges. What happened on this story?
Well, Jim Reams and his lawyer, Michael Ramsdell, appeared in Merrimack County Superior Court yesterday to challenge the state's authority to have removed him. And basically, Judge Richard McNamara said, you know, we'll have a hearing on this. File the paperwork, folks, and we'll have a hearing on this in early December is the bottom line for Mr. Reams at the moment. So he's out until early December. His deputy, Tom Reed, is also on administrative leave, as is another employee at the office. You know, there's also in the meantime, there's been, you know, the FBI and state law enforcement are looking into it. You know, there was one revelation was that there were $70,000 worth of uncashed checks. You know, whether or not this has anything to do with the allegations that are unknown at this point, remains to be seen. I mean, this is an interesting kind of constitutional question, ultimately, whether or not the attorney general, which has supervisory power over county attorneys, has the power to remove an elected officer. Under these circumstances, this happened once before in the 70s when Warren Rudman was attorney general. A Grafton County attorney named Eames was charged with showing obscene films, Deep Throat and the Devil and Miss Jones, charged with showing dirty films. And it was found essentially that, yes, the state could remove somebody who was under charges of impaired their ability to do their job. There are no charges yet in this Reams case. And so that's what his attorney is arguing, that, you know, by that standard, why is he out of his job? And so, you know, we're going to see what happens in early December on that front, and we'll see what ultimately comes of this investigation.
All right. More conversation after a short break. Stay with us.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, low enrollment for insurance exchanges spurs calls to change the health care law, and congressional hearings begin on the nomination of Janet Yellen to chair the Federal Reserve. Then relief workers struggle to get supplies to the Philippines after a devastating typhoon. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Bank of New Hampshire, providing investment management services through a constant team approach to meet its customers' goals and objectives. Details at banknh.com. And Plymouth State University, offering graduate education programs and curriculum in instruction, higher education, and social studies. Registering now for winter term. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We're getting your thoughts, questions, comments about some of the top stories of the week. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page if you like. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, I want to turn to a fun story that caught our attention this week, happening at the Derryfield School, a private middle and high school in Manchester. They're going to host the state's first ever Rock, Paper, Scissors convention or contest. Joining us now on the line is Chris McNeil. He's at the school. Chris, what is this all about?
How are you guys doing this morning?
Fine.
Well, basically, this is about a young freshman boy who's new to Dairy Field. He had a great idea to have a rock, paper, scissors championship in the state of New Hampshire. And he came to us last summer with this idea, and we've basically given him the tools to go ahead and run with it. And so here we are about a month out from the contest.
So December 14th is a big contest. You're inviting middle and high schools to send, all over the state, to send one champ, right,
correct,
to Dairy Field.
Correct. Yep.
And then December 14th, everybody gets together. And then what happens, Chris?
Well, we're basically going to have the tournament. It's going to be a round-robin format, so the players will get to play against each other, have opportunity for multiple hands. We're going to crown a champion and have cash prizes. So it's a pretty exciting event. We've invited all of New Hampshire's middle and high schools to attend, and we've got a fairly good response so far, but we're always looking for more.
Sure. So how many do you have so far signed up?
I think we're looking at about 15 or 20 right now. We had a little article in the Union Leader last week, which has sparked some interest. We're well on our way, and for a first-year event, we're pretty pleased with the results so far.
So what's the sort of broader lesson, besides, having fun with rock, paper, scissors, right? I mean, everybody loves, all the kids love to play
sure.
that, but is there a broader lesson about, organization, competition, math, statistics?
Well, there's a couple of things going on here. At Dairy Field, we're always trying to encourage kids to explore their passions, and we're also trying to give them the tools necessary to really become leaders in their community. And this is a fine example of that. Jack came to us with an idea, and so Dr. Carter, our head of school, along with a few other faculty members, have really just guided him and given him some suggestions along the way and how he might be able to implement this idea. And he's really taken the ball and run with it. And, the idea of students being able to accomplish what they want to accomplish, even though they're, 14, 15-year-old kids, is, I think, a valuable lesson, and they're able to see the rewards for their efforts and the fact that we're actually going to have this contest.
All right. Well, have a lot of fun with it, Chris, and thank you very much for being with us.
All right. No problem.
Chris McNeil with the Dairy Field School in Manchester, a private school for middle schoolers and high schoolers. And as we heard, on December 14th, they're going to have the state's first statewide rock, paper, scissors tournament. The number for you to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you like, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And gentlemen, let's go back to our listeners, and Christopher's waiting in Kittery, Maine. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Hi, Laura. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. Gentlemen, good morning. I would just like to a great icon of the local folk scene here in New England passed away yesterday, age 71. His name is Tom Hall. Tom Hall has been running a pickup session of folk music from all over Ireland, Scotland, England, and Wales at the Press Room for 30 years, we believe. We believe it's the longest-running folk session in the world, longer than anywhere in Scotland or Ireland.
Wow.
And Tom was just an inspiration to so many people coming through, young people who have gone on now to be big names in the folk scene. Actually, Fritz Weatherby discovered it and filmed a segment about it for New Hampshire Crossroads in 1986. And Tom helped to found the Maritime Festival in Portsmouth, Tom and his wife Lynn Schultz. And it's just a great sadness. People would come from all over the world. They'd come from all over the USA, Canada, Australia, Scotland, Ireland, England, Wales, just to attend these sessions.
Wow. At the Press Room, you said, Christopher.
At the Press Room. And we have this session every Friday night.
Wow.
In Daniel Street, downtown Portsmouth, from 5 o'clock till 9. And we will... He passed away yesterday. I was at the hospital when he passed. And we're continuing it again tonight. And hopefully his wife's going to be there. And we expect quite a massive turnout. And,
right, to give tribute. Christopher, thank you for calling. This is one of those stories that, I'm glad he called. I had no idea about this since I'm not really involved in that music scene in Portsmouth. So good to hear from you, Christopher. And seems like a lot of good folk passing away this week. Thanks for the call. Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Another cultural story that caught our attention this week, Dean Spiliotis, has to do where you work part of the time, Southern New Hampshire University. The men's soccer team is tied for number one so far in its division. Congrats to the Penn men. Wow, Dean, who knew?
Yeah, the SNHU men's soccer team, they were ranked number one. They're tied with Lindenwood University, which is a university in Missouri. This is NCAA Division II. They were 18-1 this season. They lost the first game and then won 18 straight, which is a pretty remarkable achievement. They're going to have their sixth straight year in the NCAA tournament. I think which is sort of a record right now, sort of a current record for a number of consecutive years. And they're going to play Saturday against Wilmington at 1 p.m. At SNHU. The field is right in the middle of the campus.
So when you look out your window, you see them working away.
Literally, my building is right next door to the field, so I see them out there playing.
All right, great. Well, and another story from Southern New Hampshire, Kevin Landrigan. Town leaders in Merrimack took action this week on a subject that's vexed them for a long, long time. That's the way toll booths are configured. It means that Merrimack residents pay a lot more in tolls than most people. So what did the town councilors decide to do this week, Kevin? They kind of said enough is enough.
Yeah, essentially they've agreed to approve a resolution to sue the state over basically discriminatory treatment on the turnpikes. Merrimack is the only known community in New Hampshire on the turnpike system where there's a toll booth at every exit in town. And this is something that certainly legislators from Merrimack have been pursuing for almost 20 years now, is to try and give them some relief. I think, as we've talked about before, former Senate President Peter Bragdon had sponsored legislation to help them out, first to get rid of all three ramp tolls. There are three exits in Merrimack. He agreed to just eliminate one of the ramp tolls that passed the Senate. It went further than anything like this has ever gone before. The House rejected it, but kind of one of the ironies here is that the turnpike system is going to make a number of changes over the next several years to become more financially solvent. And because traffic counts are not increasing dramatically, and they need more revenue to make more turnpike improvements. So I think in all likelihood, this Department of Transportation in the next 10-year highway plan is probably going to support some kind of relief for Merrimack.
But even though they need more money.
Right, but it's probably going to come at a cost.
To somebody else.
In all likelihood, I think, for example, there's going to be a strong move to move the exit, the toll interchange in Bedford. Big problem right now. About several million dollars a year is being lost in tolls because people are taking the exit just before the toll booth north and south and going to the Manchester Airport and evading the tolls. Now, we all know what lengths people will go to avoid tolls. The state knows, because they've been doing traffic counts and been watching this, that a number of Merrimack and Bedford residents essentially have been taking this toll booth, go over the river as if they're going to the Manchester Airport, and then reverse direction, come back, and go back on the turnpike.
Okay,
and
so how much do you spend on gas
exactly
doing that?
and lost time, but as I say, we'll... So I think they're probably going to move that toll booth to capture all that traffic. I think in all likelihood there probably is going to be a toll increase to pay for improvements for everyone to pay for. I think the Department of Transportation is also going to propose some kind of commuter discount for everyone. Mm. So that if you're taking, for example, using the turnpike system 30 times a month, all tolls you pass through after that period would be free. So, for example, if you commute every day back and forth and you use the tolls every day, that essentially would mean that for the first 3 weeks you pay tolls in that month, and the last week you wouldn't pay tolls. That's some way the state is trying to buffer the burden for people who use the turnpike more.
Yeah, interesting. And they're having to get creative over there at the Department of Transportation because, as you said, cars are getting more efficient. People have been driving less, and so the money that used to come in just isn't coming in like it
That's
used
right.
to. All right. Well, and speaking of the state's search for cash, Josh Rogers, the House this week approved a small expansion of gambling, even though it rejected a big expansion, casino-style gambling, earlier this year. But a small expansion may be coming, Keno.
Well, yes, the Ways and Means Committee, which, you know, has tends to look askance at big gambling changes, you know, did something that surprised some people in passing a Keno bill. And, you know, Keno is essentially in, you know, people – I mean, it's like sort of an automated bingo, more or less. It exists in Massachusetts, and you know, the state would be looking to get about $9 million a year out of that initially, and you know, could potentially be expanded. I think it initially envisions Keno being in places where alcohol is not served. It might later expand to places where drinks are served. It's not the most exciting game, but some people like it. And, you know, $9 million in the coffer is $9 million in the coffer. I guess we'll see where this goes.
That's interesting. So putting it in places where alcohol is not served, that would eliminate a lot of places, Kevin.
It would. But these – Keno's been really popular in Massachusetts, particularly the reason why the New Hampshire Lottery, too, has gotten essentially behind this is because Charlie McIntyre, who's the executive director in New Hampshire, used to be the deputy director in Massachusetts. And he was there. He was in charge of bringing Keno to Massachusetts. And so he's well aware of how popular the program is. And he's also acutely aware that the most money that is bet on Keno is along the New Hampshire border. Two of the sites that generate the most revenue in all of Massachusetts. One is a convenience store in Salisbury, New Hampshire, right over the border from Seabrook. And the other is in at a gas station, kind of also has a Dunkin' Donuts there, a mobile station in Methuen, which is right over the border from Salem. So he believes a lot of New Hampshire people are already playing this.
Wow, game. Really digging into the Keno data there. And assuming or looking at the data, it seems like New Hampshire people really like this game.
Right, and it's as Josh says, it's also a very easy game for New Hampshire to manage and administer because it's almost like the daily number. It just happens every 6 minutes while you're playing the game.
Wow. All right. Well, gentlemen, turning our attention away from what happened this week in the news and toward what we might be looking at next week, I want to let everybody know that next week The Exchange is going to kick off a week-long series. It's called How We Work. 5 years later, we'll be crunching some of the jobs numbers from the past 5 years as New Hampshire has recovered slowly from recession. We'll look at other issues, how we prepare young people for the workforce, some of the challenges that older workers face today. So that's what we're going to be doing next week. Dean, how about you? What are you going to be looking at?
Right now, it's healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. We're going to be looking at the special session that's currently going on in the state legislature to see if we'll have a compromise on Medicaid. I'm going to be watching our congressional delegation to see where they turn up on this issue of letting people keep their plans, because I think that I mentioned earlier seeing both Annie Custer and Carol Shea Porter say that they would potentially sign on to this Republican bill, which the Obama administration clearly does not want. It's just fascinating to me. And, you know, Jeanne Shaheen has been out in front, but it's almost as though other members of Congress have now kind of sped past her because the floodgates, in a sense, opened with this move by Obama yesterday. So I'm going to be following that in great detail. The other thing I'm going to start looking at is this executive councilor race in District 1. We don't really have a good sense of who might run. I've noticed that in recent election cycles, the executive council seats have taken on the same flavor in terms of the sort of the partisan political campaigns of a lot of the state legislative seats. I think, you know, you can't underestimate the importance of the executive council for appointments, for contracts, for a variety of things. So those are the kinds of things I'm going to be looking at. We'll see how SNHU does soccer this weekend.
Don't forget SNHU's soccer team. How about you, Kevin? What are you going to be looking at?
Well, kind of in keeping with your series next week, I'm really looking forward to the report of the Business and Industry Association on Monday. They're essentially coming out with their economic strategic plan. As Josh talked about, the BIA has really done something a little different than it has done in the past. It invited a lot of stakeholders that don't just represent big business or chamber of commerce types, if you will. They involved nonprofits, environmental groups, activists in housing. So it'll be interesting to see if this strategic plan is kind of what kind of variety it has. In other words, does it tackle not just the traditional issues that captains of industry might be interested in, whether it's taxes or regulation, but in fact goes beyond that and looks at some of the problems we have in this economy, the price of housing, the price of health care, the price of energy.
So the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies a couple weeks back, Kevin, put out this dashboard of economic numbers, and then the BIA, the Business and Industry Association, is going to put out, based on those numbers, a strategic plan on Monday.
That's right. And to Josh's point, too, we're really looking to what kind of – is this plan transferable to changes in public policy in the legislature next year? As Josh pointed out, it's really difficult to get big changes in an election year. They better be nonpartisan if they're going to pass at all.
Yeah, Josh, how about you?
Mostly rock, paper, scissors, Laura. but I'll be looking to I'm certainly watching what continues to churn on the healthcare front. It's going to be interesting. I agree with Kevin. What the BA is doing this year is different, and it'll be interesting to see how much attention people pay to that. And you know, I'll also be toiling along on our work series.
All right. Thank you very much for being here, all of you. Josh Rogers, thanks for taking time out again.
You're welcome, Laura.
Josh Rogers, political reporter for NHPR. Kevin Landrigan, good to see you. Thank you.
Great to be back.
Kevin Landrigan, political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Dean Spiliotis, thank you also for your time, and keep track of those penmen for us at Southern New Hampshire University.
We'll do. Happy to be here.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we kick off a week-long series called How We Work, 5 years later. In 2008, the recession hit New Hampshire's job market hard, and a half decade later, it's still recovering. We'll look at where we were and where we are today, from preparing young people for the workforce to the challenges facing older workers to defining employee satisfaction. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
This is NHPR. It's 9:59, the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Beam Show coming up next. Support for NHPR comes from UR members. M from Restaurant Week Portsmouth in the Seacoast, a 10-day culinary experience featuring 45 restaurants November 7th to the 16th. Details at restaurantweekportsmouth.com. And Comcast Business working to close the digital divide by encouraging educators, students, and families in need to learn more about the Internet Essentials program. InternetEssentials.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVU Concord.
89.1. WEVS Nashua.
88.3. WEVH Hanover.
91.3. WEVN Keene.
90.7. WEVC Gorham.
107.1. WEVJ Jackson.
99.5. WEVF Colebrook.
90.3. WEVQ Littleton.
91.9. And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Under pressure from the public and his own party, President Obama moves to allow insurers to restore canceled health policies for another year. House Republicans are expected to pass a bill today that the White House warns could dramatically undermine the Affordable Care Act.